after it had drifted down the pike, worse than anything she'd ever seen during her brief flirtation with forensic pathology, had warned Mildred what might be waiting for all of them when they finally emerged above the head of the valley. Her experience of Deathlands was still very limited, but she'd already seen and heard enough to be ready for the deepest pits of human suffering. Now they were closing on where JB had guessed the camp of the Stickies must be. There'd been the shooting and screams, the familiar stink of burning oil. Now, the ceaseless rain. As she picked her way carefully upward, Mildred pondered on the changes in the weather. In pre-dark times, there'd been spring, summer, fall, and winter. You had good days even in winter, and even more often, there were miserable ones in the best of summers. But not like in Deathlands. There were still the seasons, but now there might be a sweltering day in January in the northern plains, with snow by evening, thunder before midnight, and rain by dawn. Fog in the morning, and then more snow, followed by baking sun. A whole year's weather in a single day. Mildred guessed it must be something to do with the searing radiation that had ravaged the entire world and still lingered in certain hotspots. JB had told her about the acid rain, now less common than 15 years ago, which could strip a man to bare bones in a couple of hours. The doctor made a mental note to ask John about the great gales that he said he'd heard about from old-timers, winds that would scour paint off trucks and bark off trees. Ahead of her, the trail was almost invisible. Dawn was in the air, and she'd already heard the beginnings of the birds' chorus. The rain was depressing, and it numbed the senses. You couldn't see so well, and there was a tendency to keep your head lowered so that the icy drizzle didn't blind you. It also dampened the hearing. Mildred didn't see or hear the running, sliding figure until it was almost on top of her. A massive shape appeared, black against the blackness, clothes glittering with rain, water tumbling off shoulders and off the halo of lighter hair. A knife was gripped in the right hand, raised like a terminal benediction for her. The man's mouth opened as he saw her, only 10 paces away from him, and a strangled scream of terror and rage burst from his throat. Yeah! Mildred's survival reflex took over. Her right arm straightened like a lunging sword, her left hand coming up to grip the other wrist. Both her eyes stared straight along the steel barrel, the foresight aligned with the back, aiming at the indistinct shape of the attacker's face. There was time for only one bullet. At the exact second that Mildred squeezed the trigger, the figure lurched, feet going out from under it in the wash of mud and rain that lay heavy on the trail. But the .38 round did its job. Instead of punching a steel jacket hole through the middle of the man's face, smack between the eyes, it hit a half inch above the left eye and drove up at a slight angle. Before Mildred could snap off a second round, she was sent flying by the man's flailing legs. His heavy body whacked into her, knocking the breath from her lungs and making her drop the revolver. She slid down into the next person in line, who was Dean. He cannoned into Doc and Christina, both of whom went over in a shower of slimy mud. Jack and JB had a second's warning, and they stepped neatly off the trail, clinging to some overhanging branches to help keep their balance. Mildred saw a knife blade in front of her eyes, and she grabbed at an arm, trying to fend it off, conscious that she was part of a cascading procession of uncontrolled bodies. They'd been very close to the level of the Stickies' camp, maybe even a little above it. With the rain and the dark, it was close to impossible to be certain. They might have fallen 50 feet or 500 feet. With a jerk that rattled her teeth, the downward momentum stopped. Mildred opened her eyes, wiping a coating of mud from her face, and saw that they'd been halted by the rotting, moss-covered stump of an old tree at the edge of a small clearing. The first light from the eastern sky was breaking through, over the tops of the high mountains, making it possible to see what was happening. Dean was a few yards away, already scrambling to his hands and knees, spitting dirt. Doc was just below her and a little to one side, still hanging on bravely to Christina with one hand and his silver-topped cane with the other. Christina was half on top of him, her face buried in his coat, kicking at something that had trapped her legs. It was the figure that had triggered the chaotic panic. Mildred blinked at the dead man lying sprawled at her feet, most of his face blown away. All she could tell in that first stunned moment was that he was tall, with hair so sodden with mud and blood it was hard to tell it might once have been white. He wore the ragged remains of a dark suit. Above her, she could hear JB and Jack picking their way down the greasy path.
You all right?
Sure. I think so. Few bruises and a lot of mud, and one corpse.
You got him?
Jack arrived on the edge of the clearing, steadying himself, his white hair flaring like a dazzling burst of fresh snow.
Never saw him. Just shot. No time. You did good.
Yeah, but I don't know who he is. Had a knife, I think.
By the three Kennedys, I have not had such a thrilling adventure since I rode Larry Zapp's roller coaster in Florida.
Not a sticky.
Oh, God. You don't think he's a friend of Ryan's, escaping from up there?
Don't worry, Mildred. His name's Joe Bob, and he's no friend of mine. No loss to anyone.
Oh, clean in and out. Neat hole in and not much beggar going out.
Musketball, low velocity. Tends not to fragment or distort. What did it hit? Abe was flat on his back at a turn in the winding path. His face was deathly gray in the watery morning sunlight, and he kept trying to reach down and hold himself.
Didn't hit my balls, Ryan. Tell you that for nothing.
Too bad. That's one thing you never use.
I knew a patient once, Abe. Lawyer. Most evil, corrupt, and unpleasant man I ever saw. We found he had a growth on the colon. When we operated and took it out, we found it was benign, not cancerous. We told his wife. They were just starting a messy divorce, and she shook her head. Typical, she said. You find the one part of the bastard that isn't malignant, and you remove it.
Yeah, when I hear Doc making jokes, I figure it's time to cover me up with the dirt.
No. It might have chipped the crest of the ilium. That's your hip bone on the way through. But I don't think it did. There's some muscle damage to the transversus abdominis. That'll heal quickly, not like the tendons.
Here it comes.
No. Only question is what it might have done on the inside. Shouldn't have harmed the central nervous system. Not that far to the side. You got no trouble with moving arms or legs or anything, have you, Abe?
Don't know about anything, Doc.
I'm Mildred. He's Doc.
I'm sorry, Doc. Both Docs.
Mildred was pressing on his naked stomach, watching his face for a reaction, and touching him gently around the dark hole that was now only leaking a small amount of bright blood.
Not too painful?
I've had worse.
Near as I can guess, it might have just nicked the ascending colon. That's part of your guts, Abe. Don't worry too much about it. I think there'd be some evidence if the bullet had struck you there, close to the appendix.
Not bad.
Taking out your appendix with a musket ball? Drastic method of surgery, I suppose. Not likely to lead to any problems.
No.
Apart from an extra belly button.
With so many of them to help, it proved much easier to carry Abe along. They made something that was a cross between a stretcher and a travois, dragging the wounded man on the smoother sections of trail and taking turns to carry him when the going became more difficult. By noon, they'd reached a wider trail with the ruined remains of buildings that indicated the area had once been some sort of park. There were rotting benches perched near what must have been a spectacular scenic observation post. The rain had been blown away, and it was a glorious morning. Above them, they could see the trail leading toward a notch between two of the peaks, a place that Christina said was called Bear Claw Ridge.
Pa used to hunt over that way. Plenty of goats years ago. Small kind of township up there, all ruined. Snowed in most of the winter.
Now that the two parties were once again reunited, she seemed much happier. But Christina kept very close to Jack, and her whole body language demonstrated the depths of her hostility toward Ryan. As they traveled steadily along, Ryan and Christy were able to fill in the others on what had been happening, learning themselves of the discovery of the mutilated corpse in the river, and of JB hearing the group of lepers on their way toward the Stickies' camp. Harold and Dorina kept more to themselves, as though they were shy at suddenly finding themselves among this group of combat-wise travelers. They kept turning and looking behind them, more often than the others. Harold realized that Ryan had noticed, and grinned sheepishly.
I guess it's like having a fly on your neck you can never swat. We're worried about the Stickies, Ryan.
We all are, Harold.
Very soon after dawn, when they had just gotten back together, the sky to the south had been smeared with a huge black oil cloud, rising like a finger of doom from the ravine where the old Anasazi settlement was hidden. Gradually, the freshening breeze tore at its tip, shredding it, dissolving the dark pillar of thick smoke, spreading it far away toward the distant east. It was afternoon before they spotted any sign of pursuit. Christy had been standing at another of the places where a dented metal marker indicated there had been a scenic observation post, this time with an added, informative period flavor.
It is a historical marker, placed here by the good auspices of the New Mexico Historical Society, financed by a gift from Jim and Carla Wright of Albuquerque, on July 4th, 1990. It recalls the site where Elder Marcus Howell of the 18th Episcopalian Conference saw a vision of the Golden City of Halcyon. As a consequence,